said Aaron as he came walking over with Cade. Ossians have a similar legend about Sala. You think they work for both gods, or do some work for one and some the other?
You not take bone god lightly. Mudslug not worth the ink on grub's arse, he raged. Why you need dead crows? Better be good reason or grub kill you.
I'll show you. Aaron knelt down and picked up a crow. Ethan had done a rough job of plucking them, and feathers still clung to their bloody, stippled skin. They don't stock meat in the cookhouse, since prisoners aren't allowed any. It's all kept in the guards section, so this is the best we could do. He drew out his tin water flask from his pocket with his other hand. Draken tears. A spoonful of this will knock a grown man out. Much more will kill him. He popped the cap off the flask with his thumb and poured some of the mixture into the crow's open beak. Then he pinched the beak shut. Now it's a tasty snack for a skull dog. Cade, could you? He handed it to Cade, who was waiting with a twist of string to tie the crow's beak closed.
Dog eat crow. Dog fall asleep, said Grub,
his face clearing as it dawned on him. Or it dies, said Cade. Whichever is fine. A broad smile split Grub's tattooed face.
Dog sleep. We creep past, climb up the walkway and sneak over.
He appeared to have forgotten his earlier reservations about dead crows.
You smarter than you look.
If that ain't faint praise, I don't know what is, said Cade wryly. Then the sound of slow clapping stilled them all. 26.
Brothers, said Rafa as he walked into the bathing chamber, followed by half a dozen brutes with long knives. Look at you. A merrier band of rogues I've not seen in long a day.
His arms were open wide in a friendly gesture that wasn't fooling anyone. Aaron gave Grub an accusing glare. His first thought was that the skull had betrayed them.
Ah, don't put the blame on him now, said Rafa. You ought to be smarter about who you go asking for weapons, Highborn. Word gets around. People start to pay attention.
His cronies spread out, circling both sides of the bath. Aaron felt bitter anger in his gut. One little mistake when everything had been going so well. Failing now would be too cruel to bear. He raised his palms. We don't want trouble, Rafa. Do you want in? Is that why you've come? Rafa let out a low chuckle.
Brother, I could leave this prison tonight if I had the mind. Half the guards in Suller's Bluff take my coin, and the other half know what'll happen to their families if they cross me.
He looked at Cade.
Didn't you tell him? This is my kingdom.
It's your kingdom, Aaron agreed. We just want to leave.
Ah, but if things were that simple, what an easy life we'd all have, eh? Said Rafa, in a tone of insincere regret. But being a king carries certain responsibilities. Keep in order, that's one. So when I hear a man wants to get his hands on some blades, I get to asking what for. Might be they're planning to even a score with another prisoner. Might be they got designs on killing a guard or two. Maybe the overseer himself, given the chance.
He strolled around the edge of the pool to Grub. The skull shrank back against the wall, baring his teeth like a cornered cur, showing no sign of the great warrior he professed to be.
The key, said Rafa.
Grub handed over the cookhouse key without protest, and Aaron's heart sank further as Rafa pocketed it.
Gren's a good man, said Rafa. Heart's in the right place, Croden or not. What do you think'll happen to him when they find the cookhouse robbed and his key gone? Who'll feed his family when he loses his job? Who'll feed your fellow prisoners? You think the food's bad now, but that's 'cause you weren't here before Gren turned up. The man's a sorcerer in the kitchen, considering what he has to work with. Consequences, brothers. Any of you think of that?
Aaron hadn't, and on another day he might have felt a pang of guilt. Under the circumstances, however, Gren's plight didn't concern him in the least. Rafa walked over to him, tugging his beard absently.
When order in the kingdom breaks down, people start to ask if the king knows what he's doing, if he's really up to scratch, so to speak. Maybe he has to pay out a whole pile of guilders to make it right. Maybe he has to make promises he don't want to. And maybe the next king starts to think he's a soft touch and gets to sharpening his blade. All 'cause a few little rats bit the hand that feeds them.
We didn't mean... Cade began.
You shut up, Rafa snapped, turning from genial to terrifying in an instant. I was there when you needed help, and this is how you repay me?
Cade clammed up, shocked into silence, and Rafa turned back to Aaron.
You're highborn, but you're Ossian even so, he said. You know how it is. You need a permit from your masters just to leave the town where you live. Used to be that way where I came from, too. Peasant wanted to up and move, he had to ask permission from his lord.
And you're the king in here, Aaron said, keeping his voice steady. Though his heart was hammering, he met the pirate's gaze steadily. Even more than with Grubb, he knew weakness would prove fatal.
I'm the king, Rafa agreed, and you didn't ask my permission.
We didn't know. No chance that excuse would wash, but he tried anyway.
Too late for that. Might be I'd have given you my blessing had you asked, but that time's past. So this can go two ways. Either my boys take two fingers from each of you, make the next fool with an idea think twice before they step outside the chain of command.
He leaned closer, and his voice was a low snarl.
Or you offer me something precious enough to salve my hurt feelings, and let you carry on with this little endeavor of yours.
There it was. For all his talk, the pirate just wanted his price. Only Aaron had nothing to give him. When Cade had met him in his den, Rafa had been looking for something that might be of advantage to his contacts on the outside, someone he could leverage or extract a bribe from. But Aaron's father had been disgraced and executed, his lands and goods seized. Aaron's very name was poisoned. He had no money, no possessions, and nobody of influence would be unwise enough to associate with him anymore. Still, he could lie. He could lie and pretend his father was still alive and rich, and promise Rafa anything under the sun. But it was a desperate gamble, for he wasn't sure how much Rafa knew, and he couldn't make himself do it anyway. It would be giving too much of himself away. Even if it meant their escape, he wouldn't be a craven deceiver. His hesitation lasted too long, and Rafa stepped back, fleeting disappointment on his face.
Shame. It was a good plan. Thought you had potential.
He motioned at Cade without looking.
Him first.
No, Aaron cried. Two of Rafa's men seized Cade while two others menaced Grubb with their knives. He stayed against the wall, disinclined to interfere. Cade struggled and cried out as they pulled the glove from his left hand, forced it open and put the edge of a blade to it. His horrified gaze met Aaron's. Don't let them do this. I have nothing you want, Aaron protested to Rafa.
That's probably true, said Rafa, implacable. But there needs to be a price.
A king can show mercy.
Mercy's cheap coin if it's given too freely.
He thought a moment. But you've got a point. He looked over at his men.
Take the little fingers. That way he can still hold a pickaxe.
He turned back to Aaron.
There's mercy. Seems I'm a soft touch after all.
Aaron sought desperately for a way to avoid what was coming. Two fingers or all of them, the end would be the same for Cade. His courage hung by a thread. If he didn't escape tonight, his will would be broken for good. A month, maybe a year, and he'd be dead. Aaron didn't think of his own fingers, only of his friends. If he was maimed, all was lost.
Think fast, little rabbit,
Rafa said with something wicked in his eye. This was a game to him, Aaron realized. He just wanted to see if Aaron could think his way out of it. He won respect in the eyes of his men either way. Rage heated his thoughts. He wanted to spring at Rafa, steal his blade, turn the tables, but such heroics were the stuff of Cade's fictions. To overcome your enemy, you must first understand him. Rafa was more than just a pirate. He chose to stay in a Crodan work camp rather than walk free. He'd sailed the seas as a reaver and made a great fortune, but now he hid behind a stockade like some reclusive mastermind, running his schemes in the world outside but never seeing the results. He sometimes worked in the mine just for the exercise, or possibly the risk. He'd given ragweed to Cade, perhaps out of misplaced kindness, perhaps to see him hooked. Why was he hiding? Were Barrack League assassins really hunting him in revenge for plundering their galleon, as rumour had it? Was he hiding at all, or was there some other reason for his staying here? What did it mean? Who was he? In that moment, something happened to Aaron. He felt it like a revelation. The scraps of information he'd gathered about Rafa were like swiped brushstrokes on a canvas. By themselves, they signified nothing. But step back, see how they joined, and a picture emerged that was truer than the sum of its parts. Aaron saw that picture now, and he saw Rafa too, and knew him. Cade's distress gave him the courage to speak. "I'll tell you what I'll give you, Rafa," he said. Something in his tone impressed the pirate, for he held up his hand to hold his cronies just as they were preparing to make the first cut. "I'll give you me. One service, whatever you want, for you to claim any day from this until my last. One task, one deed, one favour, no matter what the cost to myself, no matter how despicable I might find it, if you let us go." A slow sneer of disdain spread across Rafa's face. "Is that all? What worth are you to me?" "Now, none. But I will be more than this. I can't say what fortune holds for me, but in 10 years I'll not be a cooper or a cart driver, I'll tell you that. And wherever I am, whatever I become, I'll remember my vow. When you call, I'll answer. Who can say what worth I'll prove to you then?" Rafa looked amazed. "You'd have me give your freedom on the strength of a promise. You're saying that should you end up as more than wolf dung in the forest, you might one day be of use. Forgive me, brother. I vastly underestimated the size of your balls." But Aaron was deadly serious. "I think you know the value of what I'm offering," he said. "You trade in favours, you gamble and you look to the future. You're not planning to stay in this hole. One day, all those friends of yours on the outside will have dealt with whatever keeps you here, and you'll be back on the seas where your heart is. You don't want our fingers. What use are they to you? The potential for value is better than the guarantee of none." He could have stopped there, but he didn't. He was driven on by his own momentum, intoxicated by how sure of himself he was. "You know what else? I think you want us to escape. You're bored cutting deals with Crodan lowlifes when you used to take down galleons. You're dying for a little chaos. And you'd like to see Krent's fat face sweating when he explains to his superiors how he's lost 3 prisoners. You want to know if we can do it. And deep down, you want to see us try. So take the offer, Rafa. Let us go. And I promise you, when the time comes, I'll be your man." His last words rang from the tiles into silence. They were all staring at him. He felt elated, breathless, a little mad. Then, as the silence dragged on, his certainty began to crumble like a sandcastle before the tide. His face drooped as he realized that maybe, just maybe, he'd been drastically mistaken. But Rafa threw back his head and roared with laughter, loud enough that his men cringed for fear the guards would hear. He slapped a beefy hand down on Aaron's shoulder, and suddenly he was all smiles. "Might be you'll be worth something after all," he said.
You've got a tongue on you, I'll give you that. But don't think this is a debt you can forget once you're away, brother. Should I want you found, you'll be found. And you'll lose more than a couple of fingers if you refuse my call.
I know what a promise means, Aaron said. He'd made three now. One to Cade, one to Ethan, and one to Rafa, the latter two given to fulfil the first. Trading away pieces of his future, so they might have a future at all. There is no victory without sacrifice. He'd said that to Master Fasten once, before he really knew what sacrifice was. Perhaps he still didn't, not really. But one day he was certain he would. Rafa seemed satisfied.
Well enough, then. I accept your offer.
He motioned to the men who were holding Cade, and they let him go. He scrambled away, holding his hand protectively to his chest. He was bleeding where the blade had bitten the skin, but no worse than that.
And the cookhouse key? Aaron asked. Don't push your luck, brother.
We'll be dead out there without food.
Plenty in those mountains to feed a man if he's got wits, said Rafa. Otherwise you can starve a few days, I'm sure. But I'll not see Gren disgraced. He'll get the key back before morning, and he'll owe me a favour.
Aaron opened his mouth to argue. Rafa's look told him not to.
But a king can show mercy, Rafa said,
once he was content that Aaron wouldn't challenge him further. He snapped his fingers at his men and pointed to three of them.
You, hand over your blades.
They looked at each other in confusion. To them? One asked at last.
Do it, said Rafa. It'll give them a chance, at least.
Rafa's men parted with their knives unhappily.
You read me right, said Rafa to Aaron with a nasty grin. I'd like to see a little chaos. And if you kill a guard or two on the way out, I won't salt the earth with my tears any.
He walked away, and his men followed. Aaron heard the rattle of the chain on the door as they left, and then the three of them were alone in the gloom, gazing at the knives they'd just gained.
Grub don't know how you did that,
said the Skarl with reverent awe.
Me either, said Cade. You should have that tattooed somewhere.
We lost the food, Aaron said grimly. We won't get far without it. It was a bitter blow to their chances, and even if they survived the mountains, he dreaded to think what might one day come of the promise he'd made.
Aaron, said Cade.
He wiggled his fingers in front of Aaron's face.
Let's take the positives, eh?
A bell rang in the dark outside, and Aaron raised his head.
Last bell before curfew. Anyone wants to reconsider, now's the time.
Nobody said a word.
Thought not, said Aaron. Get some rest. It's going to be a big night.
27. They sat against the cold tile walls of the bathhouse, faces dour in the faint red light. It was an hour past curfew, and as dark as it would ever get. Out there, above the roof of cloud, Tantera loomed over the world, a charred orb riven with fiery cracks, the herald of misfortune. It was an inauspicious night to attempt an escape, but the Hollow Man was on Aaron's heels, and he had no more time to wait. Nobody had spoken for a long time, each occupied with their own thoughts. Grub worried at a fingernail with his teeth. Cade hung his head, elbows on his knees and hands in his hair. Aaron examined his knife, lost in memories of his father. Randall had once told him that grief was as individual as love, and each felt their losses in their own way. Aaron's grief for his father was muddled and incomplete. The man was still a mystery to him, and it was hard to lay him to rest with so many questions left unanswered. Had Cade been right when he said this whole tragedy had nothing to do with his dalliance with Sora? Maybe his father had been a traitor after all, then. His grip tightened on the hilt of the knife. Stop, he told himself. Stop shifting the blame. Whatever his father had or hadn't done, all Aaron's misfortune could be laid at the same door. Croden's killed his father. Croden's threw them into this God's forsaken prison to die. And they did it because they were Ossians, second-class citizens in their own land, without rights or recourse to the law, slaves tricked by the trappings of freedom. No country that called itself civilized should incarcerate a boy for courting the wrong girl, nor should sons be punished for the crimes of their fathers. Whether Randil was traitor or not, the Crodans were wrong. He turned the blade in his hand, fury smouldering in his breast. He wanted to use it on someone. Cade lifted his head. "You want to hear a story?" he said. "I've got a good one. It's about how Halleck Stormfist escaped the dungeons of the Revenant King." He smiled weakly. "Might be we'll pick up a few tips." But Aaron had been inspired by fictions too long. "I'd rather hear the tale of Cade, Aaron and Grubb," he said. "How they broke out of a Croden work camp like shades in the night. It'll be the first tale you tell of us, but it won't be the last. And I'll hear it in an inn far from here, over meat and mead. How's that?"
"Aye," said Cade, his voice quiet. "That sounds fine."
Raindrops tapped against the roof, soft and tentative at first, then louder and faster, until the bathhouse rang with impacts and a fierce hiss swelled beyond the walls. They lifted their eyes to the windows, where the glass ran with water. A smile grew on Cade's face. Heavy rain. If they couldn't have fog, this was the next best thing. "Looks like Joho was listening after all," Aaron said to Cade, and he got to his feet. "It's time." He went to the bathhouse door and cracked it open. Muddy puddles jumped and seethed in the downpour, their water stained red with moonglow. A guard splashed away between the buildings, a lantern in one hand and a cloak over his head, seeking shelter. Aaron checked for archers on the walkway that ringed the inner side of the stockade. The rain made it hard to see anything at a distance, but at last he spotted one beside a struggling pitch-soaked torch, shoulders hunched, too wet to pay attention to anything but his own misery. There had been no better opportunity. He pushed the bathhouse door open to the limit of the chain and slipped out, the others close behind. They were soaked in moments, but that was a small price to pay for the cover as they darted through the alleys, watchful for guards. Cade carried the bag of crows, the blanket rope tied around his waist and shoulders in ungainly loops, ready for their climb down the outside of the stockade. The rest of the blankets they wore knotted round their necks like capes to protect them from the elements once they were free. Aaron had chosen a spot in the northwest corner for their escape, as close to the cliffs as they could get while staying concealed among the longhouses. The torches there were widely spaced, leaving darkness between, and there was nothing beyond but bare grass and riverbank and the edge of the forest some way distant. They huddled up under the eaves of a longhouse, within sight of the skulldog pens. Cade held out the bag of crows. Grubb sketched a sign in the air, a gesture of protection, perhaps, or an apology to the bone god.
"Stay here," Aaron said.
He took the bag, glanced once more at the walkway, then darted to a gap in the fence that he could peer through. The pen was a stretch of sodden ground with cross fences dividing it from its neighbours. Three skulldogs sheltered beneath the wooden scaffolding under the walkway. They shifted and prowled between the poles and struts, moving with predator's grace, hulking killers in the dark. Aaron saw Degan's execution in his mind again, and remembered how these creatures had reduced a man to a jumble of parts while he screamed and ran red into the earth.
"Courage, Aaron," he told himself.
He looked back at where Cade and Grubb were waiting, watching him expectantly.
"They're relying on you."
He pulled out a crow and lobbed it over the fence. A quick glance through the gap showed him that it had landed in a puddle near the foot of the scaffold. He threw two more. One fell short, The other bounced off a beam and almost hit one of the skull dogs. Now they were roused, and they came sniffing. The crows were unfamiliar meat, and they were cautious, but skull dogs were not known for their patience. The biggest of them shouldered the others aside and crunched a crow down, bones and all. Aaron threw another, aiming for the far side. Ethan had brought him 6 crows in all, and each dog had to eat at least one. 2 went for the same crow and began to tussle over it, snarling and growling. When one of them won the battle and tore the crow away, the other barked angrily in protest. Aaron panicked. He hadn't planned on the dogs making such a racket. He flung the last 2 crows over the fence, careless of where they went, and hurried back to the others. The skull dogs, driven to excitement, snapped and barked as they fought over the unexpected morsels.
"Dogs, bring everyone!"
Grubb hissed furiously as Aaron slid in under the eaves. As if to prove his point, a thick-set guard came into sight along the walkway, one side of a grizzled face outlined in the torchlight. He leaned down and peered into the pen, sheltering his eyes from the rain with one hand.
"Shut up!" he yelled in Croden. "Mangy bloody mongrels!"
Aaron and Cade exchanged a glance. In the shadows of the eaves, they couldn't be seen, but the noise might bring other guards.
"Let's get out of here," said Aaron. "We'll come back when it's all died down."
Cade nodded. Aaron turned to say the same to Grubb, but the skull had vanished.
"Where'd he go?"
Cade asked, alarmed. Aaron cursed under his breath. He should have known Grubb would be trouble.
"Come on,"
he said darkly. They slipped along the wall of the longhouse, away from the fence. The rain hissed and splattered around them, sluicing off the sloped roofs. Aaron was jumpy, feeling hunted. First Rafa, now this. He thought he'd considered every angle, but the plan was coming apart. Where had that god's damn skull got to? Had he taken fright and run out on them? Or had he something more sinister in mind?
"Who goes?"
Aaron froze and Cade bumped into the back of him.
"Who goes?"
came the voice again. A guard was approaching from a side alley, sword in hand, a slender shadow in the night. He carried a lantern, but it was dark, perhaps leaky and doused by the rain. Cade made a sudden motion as if to run, but Aaron grabbed his arm.
"We have permits from Captain Hassan," Aaron said.
As the guard approached, they saw that he wasn't much older than they were, barely old enough to shave. He had bulbous eyes and a nervous look about him. Aaron stood in front of Cade to block him from view. It was strange enough that they were wearing blankets as capes. If the guard saw the blanket rope tied around Cade's body, they'd be finished.
"Why are you out at this hour?" the guard snapped.
"Block latrine," said Aaron over the din of the rain. "Captain told us to stay until we'd cleared it. We were just heading back." The guard was suspicious, but too green to risk calling for help and looking like a fool. He wanted to deal with this himself if he could.
"Show me your permits," he said.
"Here," said Aaron, closing the distance between them as he reached towards his pocket, past it, his fingers closing round the hilt of the knife in the waistband of his trousers. His heart began to pound. His mouth went dry, and everything felt suddenly remote. He was going to kill a man. It seemed impossible, and yet it was happening now. It was the only thing that could happen. Him or us. Him or us. Him or us. There was a flurry of movement in the dark. The guard half turned, but too slow. Grubb crashed into him, bearing him roughly across the alleyway and into the wall of a longhouse. Before he could cry out, the skull stabbed him, quick and hard, over and over. There was something appallingly intimate about it, the way Grubb hugged him close, crushed against the wall, as his blade plunged in and out. The guard whimpered and jerked, but made no more noise than that. When Grubb finally let him go, he slid to the ground, folding up like a dropped puppet. Grubb turned towards Aaron, breathing hard, savagery in his eyes and blood on his coat. Aaron stared at him in shock. He'd been a fool to ever take this man lightly. Grubb was far more dangerous than Aaron had given him credit for.
Fargan? Is that you down there?
At the guard's voice, all three hid under the eaves. It was the archer on the walkway, the one who'd yelled at the dogs. They saw him by the light of a torch, squinting into the alley below.
Fargan? Did you call, boy?
Fargan lay on the floor, like an accusation, his eyes half open and blank. Aaron felt panic rising again. Everything was slipping out of his control. The alarm would surely be raised now. There'd be no escape. Instead, they'd be caught and fed to the...
All's well,
Cade called out in Croden. His voice was higher than usual, his vowels harsher, coming from the back of his throat. It was a near-perfect imitation of Fargan.
A mistake. All's well.
The archer kept on squinting into the dark, seeking the source of the voice. He sensed something amiss, but couldn't find the cause. Aaron willed him to move on, as if he could command him by the desperate force of his thoughts.
Fargan? The archer said again. All's well, I said, Cade called, adding a note of irritation.
The archer grunted and wandered away. Aaron let out a long, slow breath of relief and nodded gratefully at Cade.
I knew those Croden lessons I gave you would come in handy one day, Aaron said.
Aye,
said Cade. Lucky he backed off, though. I'd about reached the limit of my vocabulary.
Grub say we better move this body,
Grub put in. They dragged Fargan into the side alley he'd emerged from, where any other guards were unlikely to see him. Once touching a corpse might have disturbed Aaron, but life in the work camp had hardened him, and they divided up Fargan's gear and disposed of the body matter-of-factly. He had good boots, thick socks, and a proper cloak. Cade suggested that Aaron take his armour as a disguise, but Aaron wasn't used to wearing armour, and anyway, they'd have to travel light if they hoped to outrun the pursuit once they escaped. In the end, Aaron took his sword, belt, and scabbard. Grub didn't protest. He didn't seem to want them.
I'll check on the dogs, Aaron said.
More careful this time, yes? Grub said unhelpfully.
Once again, it was hard to find the dogs in the dark. They were all beneath the scaffolding, having retreated from the rain. One had lolled on its side and was obviously unconscious. Another was curled up nose to tail, asleep. The third was still on its feet, but barely. It wobbled here and there until its legs gave way, after which it twitched on the ground a few times and lay still. Aaron licked his lips, which were dry with nerves. The Drakentyrs had done their job. The dogs were drugged. But were they drugged enough? He dared not hesitate, or his courage would falter. He jumped up, grabbed the top of the fence poles, and pulled himself over. The skull dogs didn't react. He crept closer, ready to run if they stirred. His senses blared an alarm. Instinct told him this was suicide. Each step took him further into danger. He ignored it and pushed on, willing himself forward. Beneath the walkway, and out of the rain, he could hear the heavy sighing of the skull dogs and smell their warm animal dampness. They looked even larger up close, piles of muscle and fang that might spring into life at any moment and savage him. He kept his stolen sword ready, but even with a blade he wouldn't stand much of a chance. The thought made him sick with fear. He was keenly aware that he'd bet his life on a drug he knew almost nothing about.
Did you all get your fill?
One of the skull dogs jerked. Aaron's heart lurched and he jumped back, blade raised high. Then it gave a long sigh and settled back into unconsciousness. Hearing no screams or barks, Grub and Cade came over the fence and hurried across the pen. Grub, his knife between his teeth, started to climb the scaffold, moving smoothly between the criss-crossing poles. Cade followed him.
"Reckon it's a sight safer up there than it is down here," he said, eyeing the skull dogs.
Aaron agreed. The scaffold was an easy climb even when wet, and they soon caught up with Grub, who was balanced on a crossbeam just below the walkway, knife back in his hand. The skull jabbed upwards, where the wood was creaking beneath the tread of an approaching guard. "We wait for him to pass," Aaron whispered. "Then we go."
Grubb gave him a steady look.
"You think like child. Sneak past, impossible."
Aaron opened his mouth to argue, then didn't. In his heart, he knew the Skull was right. Slipping over the stockade behind the guard was the stuff of stories. He tasted bile in his throat, swallowed it.
"I'll follow you up."
Grubb put his knife back between his teeth. Footsteps passed overhead again, the dejected tread of a drenched man grudgingly doing his duty. Aaron felt a moment of pity. Croden or no, he had a life, and perhaps a family. Maybe he was a good man, a decent man. But right now he stood between Aaron and freedom, and that meant he had to be dealt with. Grubb went up and over the edge of the walkway with a grace belied by his bulk. Aaron heard quick running footsteps, and when he pulled himself up he found the two men struggling in silence. Grubb's knife went in and out. The guard stiffened and sagged. Once he'd stopped moving, Grubb pushed his limp body over the stockade wall. Aaron felt a moment of crawling horror at the sight. A man's life extinguished with such frightening ease. It didn't sit right. But then he remembered all the other lives, all the Ossian lives that had ended here. It didn't seem so much like murder after that, more like retribution. Aaron crouched next to Cade and unraveled the sodden rope of blankets, while his friend tied one end around a stockade spike. Even in the dark between the torches, concealed by the driving rain, they felt exposed. Grubb looked up and down the walkway for signs of other guards, taut with nervous energy. Haste made Cade clumsy, and the rope slipped off the wet pointed tip of the spike. He tried again, and failed again. Aaron resisted the urge to scream at him to get on with it. The third time, Cade made the blankets fast. An arrow smacked into the inside of the stockade wall, inches from his face.
"Prisoners escaping!" came a shout from the dark.
Grubb reacted first. He shoved past Cade, grabbed the rope and flung it over the wall, sending it uncoiling into the night. Then he went over himself, clambering down hand over hand.
"Go," Aaron said to Cade, searching for the archer who'd fired on them.
A guard, alerted by the cry, was running towards them, drawing his sword as he came. Cade hesitated, reluctant to leave Aaron behind, but Aaron shouted, "Go!" again more forcefully. This time he did as he was told, seizing the blanket with both hands and scrambling over the top of the stockade. Aaron ducked as another arrow flew out of the rain. It nicked his shoulder, cutting through several layers of fabric but missing the meat by a hair's width. Now he saw the archer, up on the walkway near the cliffs, knocking another arrow. Only the darkness and rain had ruined his aim thus far, but Aaron didn't want to try his luck a third time. There was a short, sharp tearing of fabric, a cry, and the thump of a body hitting the ground. Aaron, heart in his mouth, rushed to look out over the edge of the stockade and saw the tattered edge of the blanket rope flapping loose beneath him. The knots may have held, but the cheap material had torn beneath the weight of Grubb and Cade. He searched for signs of his friend, but his night vision had been destroyed by the nearby torches, and he could see nothing down there.
"Jump, Aaron!" Cade called from the dark. "I ain't hurt! Jump!"
The guard with the sword had almost reached him. The archer was drawing his bow. Aaron couldn't see the ground, but he knew from memory that the stockade was high, the fall enough to break a limb or worse. He jumped anyway. Air roared in his ears. His clothes flapped against him as he plunged through infinite dark. Then his feet hit the earth, and his knees buckled hard, slamming him onto his side, his head whiplashing down after. It was an impact that would have killed him, if not for the rain. Soil had turned to spongy mud in the downpour, and though the impact almost knocked his wits out of him, it wasn't hard enough to prove fatal. Cade dragged him up, frantic in the bloody half-light.
"Come on, move!"
Grubb was already sprinting for the trees further along the riverbank. An arrow whipped through the air and hit the earth with a wet thump.
"Aaron, run!"
The urgency in his voice cut through Aaron's daze. Despite the pounding in his head, he was whole. He was alive, and he could run. He forced his muscles into motion, and with Cade's arm round him, he found his feet. Stumbling at first, then faster and surer, the fugitives fled into the rain, the sound of alarm bells clanging in their ears. 28. The mountains lit up from horizon to horizon as lightning cracked the sky and thunder tumbled away across the peaks. The wind whistled and howled, flinging rain where it went, and the clouds raced overhead. What had started as a downpour had become a storm of rare fury. "I might have prayed a bit too hard for bad weather," Cade muttered as he clung to the slippery rock face with freezing fingers and tried not to think about falling. Above him, Aaron was grimly focused on the next handhold, the next ledge, while Grubb was almost at the top already. That ugly bastard climbed like a spider. Cade, stronger than Aaron but never as nimble, came slowly and steadily behind, choosing his way with care. He found a position to rest in for a few moments and looked over his shoulder at what they'd left behind. Between the folds in the mountainside, he could see all the way back to the camp, where torches marked the perimeter. Beyond it, across the black absence of the river, lights glowed in the village. It was still dishearteningly close. They'd run for what felt like forever, but they hadn't come half so far as he'd imagined. Between them and the camp was a pine forest covering the slopes, a sea of branches thrashing in the wind. Lanterns moved among the trees, carried by the guards that chased them. The barking of skull dogs drifted up into the reddened night. "Cade!" He looked up to see Aaron frowning at him. "All right?" Aaron asked. Cade wiped rain from his face. "Aye," he said. "I'm all right." And he reached up and found his next grip, and then the next. When he got to the top, Aaron helped him over, and the three of them crouched together in a brake of ferns at the base of some shivering pines. Cade breathed into his hands to warm them and put his gloves on. Cold as he was, climbing in gloves was a recipe for disaster.
"Grub see hundreds down there," said Grub.
The tattoos round one side of his mouth curved as his lips twisted into a smile.
"But they not catch Grub."
Cade figured that a wild exaggeration. There were dozens of lanterns at best. He wondered what else Grubb had exaggerated. Despite Aaron's insistence that skulls weren't allowed to lie, Cade had doubted Grubb's boasting from the start. Could be that ice bear he'd slain was more like an ice squirrel. "We keep heading up, straight as we can," Aaron said. He was all stern efficiency, the way he got when he had a plan. "The storm's on our side. It'll put the dogs off our scent." He sniffed, wiped his nose with the back of his hand. "The further we get, the better our chances. They'll call off the search eventually. We just have to outlast them." Cade took heart in that. No one did dogged persistence quite like Aaron. When he set his mind to something, he was unstoppable. They'd outlasted prison. They could outlast this pursuit as well. They set off again beneath the dripping trees, following Aaron's lead. The branches moved restlessly. Shadows wavered and darted. They saw phantoms all around them, their minds conjuring soldiers from the rain. Cade fixed his eyes on Aaron's back and forged ahead. At last, they came to a wide trail cutting across their path. Aaron waved them back, and they hunkered down among the foliage as two mounted soldiers galloped past them. Once they were gone, Cade stuck his head out and peered up the trail, which climbed steadily towards a narrow defile, a pass between the cliffs. Four men waited there, blocking the way. "They're ahead of us," Aaron said, "trying to cut us off." On the other side of the trail, the slope was thickly forested, rising towards a bare peak. "Keep going. We'll find a way up. Climb if we have to."
"Grub say only idiots follow trails anyway," the skull sneered.
To their left, they could see lanterns approaching, and they heard the barking of dogs. "Huntsmen,
Best be elsewhere before they get here, said Cade. He thumbed at Grub. Don't need to be a dog to smell this fella.
Grub hope your razor wit come in very handy when skull dog eating your face.
Shut up and move, Aaron snapped.
An ill-timed bolt of lightning lit them up as they scampered across the trail. They crowded breathlessly into the foliage on the other side, listening to the thunder as it rumbled away into the distance.
Nine! I thought the storm was on our side, Cade complained. You reckon those huntsmen saw us?
Grub think they didn't, the skull opined.
The lowing of a horn came to their ears, carried on the wind.
Aaron think they did, said Aaron. Go!
They fled through the trees, half blind in the dark, their feet finding the ground more by instinct than sight. Twigs grabbed at their clothes as they slipped and stumbled on wet roots and muddy rocks. Behind them, they heard shouts from the huntsmen. The horn sounded again, and the skull dogs barked eagerly, sensing prey. The slope steepened, and they began to struggle. None of them was at their strongest, and Cade had spent a week idle in the infirmary, hardly moving. The sounds of pursuit drove them all on. The pain in Cade's chest and limbs would be nothing to the pain if they were caught. Soon they heard running water over the rain and came to a narrow, rocky channel, a trench in the mountainside that crossed their path. There was a shallow stream at the bottom, shin-deep and several paces wide. Aaron was climbing down into the channel and was about to cross when Cade, stumbling after, grabbed his arm.
Upstream, said Cade, pointing. It'll help throw off the dogs.
Aaron saw the sense in it. Upstream, he agreed, and he stepped into the water and splashed up the channel. Cade and Grub followed, slipping and sliding on the loose rocks underfoot. It was hard going, and Cade went over on his hands and knees more than once, but the next time the horn blew it sounded further behind them. The stream ended at a sheer cliff. A thin waterfall spewed down from high above. There was no hope of scaling it, so they started to make their way along the foot of the cliff. Cade was shivering despite the exertion, his waterlogged clothes weighing him down and his feet squishing in his boots. A stitch was growing in his side, and he could still hear the dogs, too close for his liking. Staggering, nearing exhaustion, he blundered through the branches, following glimpses of Aaron and Grub as they moved in the shadows.
Those guards ain't much fitter than we are, and they're weighed down by armor. We just need to outlast them.
Then suddenly, the trees ended, and they came out into the open with stone beneath their feet. Lightning flashed the scene and showed them the bare lip of a gorge, a ragged slash in the land with steep sides and a river at the bottom, the same river that flowed past Sulla's Bluff. They could see the lights of the camp downstream. Somehow they'd got turned around, come back on themselves. Beyond the gorge, the mountains rose crooked and wild, a savage, empty land under the storm. Savage, empty, and utterly beyond their reach. Aaron swore, looking about like a hunted animal. Cliffs rose to their left, barring progress along the gorge. The only choice was to go back, or to follow the gorge downslope, back towards Sulla's Bluff and the camp again.
"Which way, Mudslug?" Grub demanded.
Aaron didn't have an answer for him. He was still trying to find one when his eyes fixed on something over Cade's shoulder. Cade turned, heart sinking, knowing what he'd see when he did. Men were moving through the trees, soldiers with bows and swords, huntsmen with skull dogs straining at their leashes. There was a shout as they spotted the fugitives. Cade's guts turned to water. He backed towards Aaron and the lip of the gorge. There was nowhere to run now. They were trapped. Grub bared his teeth and pulled his knife as the guards reached the edge of the trees. There were six of them, and two dogs. The archers covered them with their bows. The swordsmen drew their blades. Cade looked to Aaron, hoping for signs of a plan, but there was only devastation in his friend's eyes. It was a look Cade had seen once before, when Aaron was being dragged from his house with his dead father lying in the dining room. Here was defeat, and it was final. He hadn't even drawn his stolen sword.
"I won't go to the dogs," said Aaron, and he looked over his shoulder into the depths of the gorge.
Cade felt sick with terror as he realized what Aaron was saying. But there was death coming either way, quick or slow, and he found it hard to argue with Aaron's line of thought. He remembered Degan's fate and feared to share it.
"There's a river. Maybe we'll live," he heard himself say.
"Maybe," said Aaron with a wan smile, but there was a farewell in his voice.
"Not Grub," Grub cried. "Grub not ready to go to the Bone God yet."
He raised his knife in the bloody light, and at the top of his lungs he roared a challenge in Skarl.
"Akka Durgotha, Jegkaum!"
Then he ran at the guards, screaming like a mad thing. The guards let slip their leashes, and the skull dogs burst from the undergrowth, racing across open ground to meet Grub's charge. Lightning flashed, and they were frozen in tableau, the tattooed Skarl, veins bulging at his neck and insanity in his eye, his pitiful blade held aloft, the skull dogs wearing masks of death, saliva spooling from their fangs. Bowstrings thrummed, and the dogs folded mid-stride, crashing to the ground. They threw up fins of rainwater as they rolled and skidded to a halt in two heaps, one with an arrow in the back of its head, the other pierced through the ribs. Grub stumbled to a stop as he saw movement in the trees behind the guards. A sword swung out of the shadows and cleft an archer from collarbone to pelvis. Bowstrings snapped again, and blades met flesh. Half the guards were dead before they knew they were under attack. The others had a heartbeat to make peace with the Primus before they followed their companions. In moments it was over. Grub stood bewildered in the storm, staring at the skulldogs, as if uncertain whether their deaths had been his doing. Aaron and Cade shivered by the lip of the gorge, their backs to the abyss, as they waited to know the nature of these strangers. Four figures stepped from the trees. Two held bows, a well-dressed, handsome young man with a neat moustache and a stern young woman with ginger hair tied back from her face. The other two carried swords and had the bulk and the walk of warriors. One wore his hair in a strip along the centre of his skull, falling to one side of his face in the manner of the wailers of the Bitterbracks. His companion had a thick black beard and wore an expression darker than the thunderheads piled at his back.
"That him?"
asked the Bitterbracker, pointing his sword at Aaron. They walked past Grub, ignoring him, and stood before Aaron and Cade. The bearded man looked hard at Aaron.
"It's him," he said at last, with something like disgust in his voice. "He's got the look of his father."
Lightning flickered and revealed a wide, puckered scar that ran across his throat, where no hair grew, and which his beard couldn't quite hide.
"Aaron of Shoal Point," the hollow man said. "I've been looking for you."
29. The wind skirled up from the gorge at Aaron's back, flapping his wet clothes against him. His limbs had no strength in them. Shock had stolen it away. He stared at the face of the hollow man and was frozen in place by the sight of a childhood nightmare come to life.
"Gonna jump, eh?"
said the Bitterbracker in Ossian. He peered over the edge.
"Wouldn't recommend it."
"You know who I am, boy,"
the bearded man growled. His voice was deep and damaged, gargly with phlegm.
"You're the hollow man," Aaron whispered.
The Bitterbracker gave a surprised bark of a laugh, while his companion's expression became darker still.
"Is that what your father called me? Well, it's as good a name as any, and I've gone by a lot. But you'll call me Garrick. This is Keel."
Aaron belatedly remembered the sword at his belt. His hand moved towards it, but his fingers had barely closed on the hilt before Keel's blade was at his throat.
Wouldn't recommend that, either, said Keel. Aaron's eyes roved frantically, looking for escape. More strangers had moved up on Grubb while their companions covered him with bows. A tall, black-haired woman carrying a shield and broadsword, a whip-thin young man wielding a slender blade. Hanging back was a small, studious-looking youth in spectacles, clutching a wet pack to his chest. Sense overcame his panic. They were outnumbered, and fighting was hopeless. He took his hand slowly from the sword hilt. "Have you come to kill me?" he asked, his voice as firm as he could make it. Garrick glowered at him with enough hate that Aaron could guess the answer.
"Had I the choice, perhaps I would," said Garrick, "but I don't."
Before Aaron could puzzle that out, a horn blew in the forest near at hand. "Garrick," warned the last of the strangers, a squat, thick-set old warrior with a bushy brown beard and an axe in each hand.
"If you want to keep drawing breath, come with me now," Garrick snapped at Aaron.
He glanced at Cade, then back at Grubb.
"Those two can go their own way."
Cade stepped forward in alarm.
"Hoi, no, wait!"
"Cade comes with me," Aaron said, grabbing Cade's arm.
"We don't need the baggage," Garrick said impatiently,
and seized Aaron to drag him away. But Aaron twisted and tore free from his grip, violently enough that he almost went over the edge of the gorge. Keel grabbed him with his free hand and pulled him back.
"You do have a death wish," Keel said in amazement.
Aaron shook him off and glared defiantly at Garrick.
"Cade comes, or I don't."
"Garrick,"
said the axe-wielding man with less patience than before.
"All right, Tarby," said Keel, waving a hand at him. "It's not worth the argument, Garrick. Let's go."
Arden looked past the two men to Grubb, crouched at bay in the rain and red darkness, looking like a beast surrounded by hunters. He met Aaron's eye across the distance, and his lips pulled back in a slight snarl. Aaron remembered the feel of his fists, the anger and humiliation, the insults, the petty viciousness. Grubb was a vile bully, a fool and a liability.
"Him too," said Aaron, motioning with his hand.
Cade stared at him in surprise.
"Garrick,"
Tarvey snapped. Garrick turned away with a curse and stalked towards the others, jamming his sword back in its sheath. Keel frowned slightly at Aaron, as if trying to work him out. Then he took him by the shoulder and pushed him after Garrick.
"Vala, Otten, Dox, let him be,"
Keel called to the men and women watching Grubb.
"We're leaving. Fen?"
The slender red-headed girl pointed off into the trees.
"Good. You're in the lead. Osman, bring up the rear."
"Understood,"
said the other archer, the handsome man with the moustache. Aaron went ahead of Keel through the rain, the bitter bracker staying close at his shoulder. Was he a prisoner again, or had he been freed? It had all happened too fast, to be sure. At least Cade was still with him. He felt his friend clutch his arm, though whether he was offering reassurance or seeking it, Aaron didn't know. The others had left Grubb alone and melted back into the tree line. The Skarl watched them go, likely calculating whether he'd be better off on his own or sticking with this well-armed group of strangers. At least he had that choice now, Aaron thought. Wretch though he was, he deserved more than to be abandoned to the Croden dogs. As Aaron passed him, Grubb blew a plug of snot from his nose, squared his shoulders and followed, away from the gorge and into the trees. Thunder grumbled distantly as they hustled through shadowed ways beneath the pines. The worst of the storm was over, but rain still splashed and trickled about their feet, pooling in the imprints of their boots. Aaron was surrounded by strangers, their faces flashing in and out of the darkness, caught in moonlit moments and gone again. Some were grim with purpose, like the swordswoman, Vala. Others looked as nervous as Aaron was, and almost as young. The spectacled youth, and the thin one with the coif covering his head. Otten and Dox, but he didn't know which was which.
"What does the Hollow Man want with me?" he dreaded to guess. The only comfort was that these people were Ossian and therefore better than the alternative. A horn blew again, just ahead of them. Then came the ring of steel on steel. The sound of combat tumbled towards him like a wave, and suddenly the forest was full of enemies, men and women fighting everywhere. Many times Aaron had dreamed of facing real combat, but in his mind it was never like this, this wet confusion of huffing breath, thrashing branches, fearful glimpses of metal. The fight swallowed him so fast that he stumbled to a halt and looked about dazedly, trying to locate the threat, to make some sense of the chaos around him. Kiel was clashing with a Crodan guard nearby. As Aaron stared, the Bitterbracker warrior made three swift parries and took the guard's arm off at the elbow. The guard was still staring at the stump when Kiel's next blow took his head off. Grubb rushed past, keeping his head down, Osman behind him. The archer halted when he saw Aaron and Cade, wide-eyed like frightened rabbits in the rainy dark.
"Come on, friends. Now's not the time to hang around."
His accent was highborn, nasal, from the rainlands in the south. He raised his bow and fired into the trees.
"Is that a sword at your hip, Aaron? Can you use it?"
Cursing himself for a mudwit, Aaron drew the sword he'd taken from the dead guard. Master Oryk had trained him for this ever since he was old enough to hold a practice blade. He'd hoped one day to fight in a noble war against the Erds or the godless Dernish. Now they were under attack. The least he could do was raise his god's damned weapon.
"That way,"
Osman said, pushing them ahead of him. They hurried off through the trees, Aaron holding his sword tight, Osman slipping watchfully along in their wake. Cade gripped his knife in his fist, eyes skittish in the dim red light. The ground beneath their feet sloped sharply, and they skidded down through mud. Aaron almost tripped over the body of a dead man lying agape among the roots and rocks. Distant lightning flashed, and he caught sight of Fenn, crouching on a boulder ahead of them, loosing a shot into the darkness. The crack of thunder didn't quite cover the scream of the man she killed. A bush thrashed to his left, loud and sudden. Aaron whirled in surprise as a Crodan guard came stumbling through, half falling in his haste. Aaron raised his sword instinctively and braced himself as the guard, unable to check his momentum, plunged forward onto its point. He felt the guard's leather armor give way, then the awful slithering resistance of muscles and organs as the blade pushed into his chest. His eyes bulged, his cheeks puffed, air hissed through lips pressed tight together. He began to tip sideways, and Aaron stepped back and pulled his blade free before it could be yanked from his hand, just as he'd been taught. The Crodan slumped hard to the earth.
"Nine," said Cade in amazement. "You killed him."
Aaron wasn't sure if that even counted. It felt more like the Crodan had used Aaron to inadvertently kill himself.
"Move, mudslug," Grubb snarled at Aaron, emerging from the trees ahead of them. "Don't die yet. Grubb still needs Mudslug's friends."
He spotted the dead man, grinned nastily as he realized what had happened.
"Eh?" he said. "Mudslug a warrior now."
He slapped Aaron on the shoulder, then shoved him into motion again. The sounds of fighting diminished as they crashed onwards through the branches. Vala appeared, having run out of Crodans to fight. Then came bushy-bearded Tarvi with his axes. They reached a shallow hollow where the trees were sparse and the grassy earth was patched with new rain pools, and found Fenn waiting there with Otten and Dox.
"Garrick and Kiel?"
Vala asked.
"Mopping up," said Fenn.
Kiel pushed through the undergrowth, Garrick with him.
"We get them all?" Kiel asked.
"Think so," said Vala. She gave the bespectacled youth a worried look. He was wheezing.
"All right, Dox."
"He'll be fine," said Otten, rubbing Dox's back. "His lungs, you know."
"Everyone here?"
Garrick asked, scanning the group, black hair plastered to his brow. His gaze lingered balefully on Aaron.
"He hates me," Aaron thought, "and I don't know why."
Garrick's eyes flicked to Fenn.
You have a way out?
Fenn pointed with one slender finger. There's an old rope bridge, crosses the gorge. We can cut it free behind us and the Crodans will be stuck on this side, if it's still there.
Well, I, for one, am keen to find out, said Tarvi. So what are we...
He was cut short as Garrick raised his hand for silence. They tensed, weapons ready.
You hear?
He whispered.
I hear nothing, said Keel.
Exactly.
And now Aaron understood. The rain splattered and slapped. Distant thunder rang across the peaks. But no insect called. No animal stirred. No night bird squawked at the storm. All the small sounds, so faint and frequent that they usually went unnoticed, had stopped. Aaron felt something cold crawl up his spine. A sharp hiss to his right, the whip of leaves, a blur of movement and a dull thump. All eyes went to Otten, who staggered back from Docks, looking down in puzzlement at the thick arrow with ragged black fletching sticking out of his chest. Then his eyes rolled up in his head, and he crumpled to the ground.
"Dread knights!" Garrick roared. "To the bridge!"
They took to their heels. Keel seized Aaron and shoved him after Fenn. As he stumbled into a run, he glanced back to check on Cade and saw Vala dragging Docks away, the younger man still gasping for breath, eyes wide with panic behind his spectacles. He was trying to say Otten's name, but he couldn't get it out. There was a crash of branches, and an enormous warrior burst from the trees. He was a giant of a man, clad head to toe in tarnished black iron armor. Aaron had never seen the like. It was all hard edges and straight lines, brutality without elegance. A heavy helm covered his head, with horizontal slits concealing his eyes and circular breathing grills. He held a massive hammer, and as he emerged, he swung it in a great lateral arc. Vala yelled and threw herself aside. Docks wasn't so quick, and was swept up by the blow, flung bodily away to slam into a tree with a horrific cracking of bones. Vala was back on her feet in a moment, sprinting towards the others with abject terror written on her face. The giant swung his great head to track her and lumbered after her.
"Dreadknights! Joe has mercy, what are dreadknights doing here?"
Osman demanded, his voice high with desperation, as they scrambled and slid through the tight-packed trees. Aaron wiped sodden hair from his face, panting with fright and tiredness, his heart battering at his ribs. Crodan soldiers and skulldogs were one thing, but this was another level of horror. The sight of the Dreadknight inspired some primal reaction in him, his ancestors' fear of the dark beyond the campfire and the nameless toothed terrors that shunned the sun. Keel ran at their side, the brawny Bitterbracker searching the trees as he went. Aaron saw glimpses of the others up ahead, shadows among shadows, frantic movement in the glistening rain. An arrow slashed through the air, making him duck, and buried itself, quivering in a tree. He looked back as he heard a rustle of branches, but it was only Vala catching them up, having outpaced her huge opponent. Then the lightning stuttered again, and a cloaked figure moved through the trees beside her, flowing like liquid night. Beneath the black cowl, he saw a metal face frozen by the flash, wearing an expression of anguish, like a mummer's mask of tragedy. Two thin blades in two gloved hands, one long and one short, glinted cruelly in the red glow of the blood moon. His mouth opened to cry out a warning, but the cowled figure lunged, and Vala disappeared beneath his flowing cloak. The flash of lightning faded, leaving her lost in the dark behind them.
"Keep going! She's gone!"
cried Keel over the rumble of thunder that followed, and they ran recklessly onwards, branches lashing their faces, death at their heels. Two shoulders of rock loomed ahead, slick and wet with rain. Angling between them was a narrow stony path, down which Osman and Grubb sprinted. Aaron, Cade and Keel plunged out of the forest and raced after them, single file along the path, until they were spat out onto a small ledge with sheer walls of rock to either side, and the whistling expanse of the gorge before them. The gorge,
and a bridge to cross it. It was fashioned from ropes and planks, tattered with age, and it swayed perilously in the wind. None of that had deterred Grubb, who'd somehow managed to be first across and had almost reached the other side. Osman followed him, less sure-footed, while Garrick and Tarvey stood arguing to one side, and Fenn eyed the bridge uncertainly.
"Don't be a fool," Garrick said to Tarvey. "Are you that eager to throw your life away?" "You're the fool if you think they won't catch us before we cut that rope," Tarvey said. "Our mission is more important than me, more important than all of us. They'll butcher us in the open, but I can hold them on that path where they can only come at me one by one. Go! I'll buy you what time I can. Fenn, get your ass on that bridge."
Fenn jumped at the sound of his voice and did as she was told. Tarvey hefted his axes and headed back the way they came, as Keel herded Cade after Fenn. At the entrance to the defile, Tarvey stopped and looked back at Garrick. His mouth was a grim line, and his gaze held the sorrowful determination of a man going willingly to his end.
"Make this worth something," he said,
and turned away. Aaron saw a look of grief pass over Garrick's face.
"Get moving," Keel urged.
Aaron sheathed his sword and went teetering out over the gorge, both hands on the ropes to steady himself. The drop yawned beneath him, the river at the bottom a dim sparkle, and the wind shoved and pulled, seeking to tip him over. Chilled and soaked and terrified, he could do nothing but forge forwards through the tempest, his eyes fixed to his feet as he went from plank to plank as fast as his nerve allowed. Keel was close behind him, Cade ahead. To either side was the gorge, which felt vaster than it ever had when he was on solid ground. The planks creaked beneath his weight, but even though the bridge shivered and swung, it held firm. Osman was waiting at the other end to haul Cade in, and was just reaching out for Aaron when they heard a thin cry from the far side of the gorge, carried on the wind. Tarvey's cry, a sound of pain and terror, for even warriors' courage faltered when faced with the uncertainty of the end. Osman's lips were pressed tight as he pulled Aaron past him, and his eyes were distant with anger and sorrow. Keel and Garrick were the last to cross. On the far side, where the defile widened to a ledge, a scrawny figure emerged. He was tall and skeletal, wrapped in a close-fitting garb fixed with many belts and straps, and carried an enormous black bow almost as tall as he was. As he pulled an arrow from the quiver at his back, he raised his head. There was something wrong with his features, something off-kilter, but the rain blew between them and Aaron couldn't see clearly.
"Cut the ropes!"
Garrick was yelling as Keel reached the end of the bridge.
"Be ready!"
Osman threw down his bow and drew his blade as the Dreadknight knocked the arrow and sighted.
"Look out!"
Aaron shouted, pointing. A bowstring thrummed next to him, and an arrow shot past close enough to make him jump. It was Fenn. Her arrow flew out across the gorge, wobbled in the wind, and struck the ground inches from the Dreadknight. A moment later, the Dreadknight let fly, aiming for Garrick, but whether it was the wind or the distraction of Fenn's arrow, the shot missed its mark and thwacked heavily into a support pole on Aaron's side of the gorge.
"Cut 'em!"
Garrick cried as he reached the end of the bridge. Osman swung his blade, and Keel too. In three or four hacks, the ropes were severed. The bridge slumped and fell free, drifting down into the gorge to slap uselessly against the other side. When Aaron looked up next, there were three of them on the far ledge. The monstrous armoured man with the hammer, the skeletal archer with the deadly bow, and the metal-masked man with the cowled cloak and paired blades. Three dreadknights, heavy with threat, like predators thwarted of their prey. The gorge lay between them now, and the fugitives were hidden by the sheltering dark of the trees, but there was something in the way they stood that said this wasn't over yet. Eight men and women had rescued Aaron, Cade, and Grubb from the Crodans. Only half of them remained. Aaron felt himself seized by the front of his coat and was pulled face to face with Garrick, whose eyes were dark with hatred.
"This is on you, boy," he snarled.
All of their deaths are on you.
He shoved Aaron away and raised his head to address the others.
We don't stop till dawn. You can be sure those accursed bastards will be following after us.
They obeyed without word or argument, moving off into the undergrowth. Aaron felt Cade's hand on his shoulder.
He's wrong, said Cade. Ain't none of this is your fault.
Aaron looked away, full of shock and hurt and anger.
Damn you, Garrick the Hollow Man. Damn you, whoever you are.
But the others were leaving now, and for all the loathing and resentment that welled up inside him, there was nothing he could do but follow. 30.
1 foot, then the other. Ain't no more to it than that.
Cade stumbled towards the dawn on leaden feet. His eyelids drifted closed, jerked open, slowly closed again. He was drenched and cold and impossibly weary, yet still he drove himself on. He'd hoped to leave this kind of misery back in the mine, but here he was again, half alive and dreaming of a respite that felt like it would never come.
1 foot, then the other.
But it wasn't that easy. He wasn't like Aaron, who could trudge like a mule until he dropped dead. He didn't have that kind of determination. He couldn't go another step. And yet somehow it happened anyway. The storm had blown itself out, but it had rained throughout the night, and a chill wind blew in the mountains. There was no forest to shelter them now. They'd reached the high passes, where icy streams splashed between slopes of dank grass and black flint. Cade had no idea where they were headed, only that they were going there at a punishing pace.
Dreadnights, he thought.
They were only whispered of in Shoal Point. Da said they were just a Croden lie to keep people in line, and even his ma had thought them myths. But Cade knew the truth of it now. He wondered what else the world had to teach him, and if he'd like any of it better than the lesson he'd just learned. Aaron coughed at his side. He'd been coughing for hours. At first he tried to suppress it, but soon it slipped from his control and racked him, leaving him doubled over, wheezing and breathless. The sound worried Cade. He'd heard coughs like that in the longhouse at night, coughs that rattled in the lungs like dice, the kind of cough that killed you.
Easy now, said Osman, a hand on Aaron's back. Here's Fen. Let's see what she's found.
Fen was picking her way towards them along the bank of a rain-swollen stream. She was clad in a drab green hooded cloak, her ginger hair the only bright colour in a grey and grim world. The faces that surrounded him were grim too. Barely a word had been spoken since they left the gorge. Garrick was a mass of bunched rage, his shoulders tight. Keel was dour and lost in thought, and Osman sorrowed. Grubb was silent too for once, though his expression was sly and restless. Like Cade, he was wary of this rescue, and looked ready to bolt if he had to.
"What news?" Keel asked, as Fen reached them.
"There's a place up ahead," she said. "It'll do."
"Hear that?" Osman said to Aaron. "Not far now, then we can rest."
Aaron gave him a grateful glance and a nod. Cade was grateful too. Of all of them, only the highborn man had showed kindness. Fen was aloof and uncaring, Garrick puzzlingly and frighteningly hostile, and Cade couldn't make Keel out at all.
1 foot, then the other, Cade murmured.
That's right, said Osman. Good man.
At the top of the slope, the land flattened into a high, narrow valley dotted with dead trees. Fen led them to a hollow in a cliff face where the stream ran close. There, beneath an overhang, was a patch of earth and smooth stone that had remained relatively dry during the downpour. Cade bundled into shelter with the others, shivering with cold, his legs trembling. Unable to stand any longer, he threw himself down with an arm for a pillow and was mugged by sleep the moment he closed his eyes. The pain of a dead leg hauled him halfway back to consciousness. He'd fallen asleep on his side, and the hard ground had cut off his circulation. There was a blanket covering him. He didn't know who'd put it there. He rolled over to ease the discomfort in his thigh. Daylight narrowed his eyes, and he heard the splashing of the stream nearby. The rain had stopped, and a fire burned in the hollow directly in front of him. The heat had dried his wet hair, and now his clothes were merely damp and stiff, rather than entirely soaked. Lulled, he sank back towards sleep.
"And then?" said a voice. Keel, the Bitterbracker.
He was standing with Garrick, their backs to the hollow, looking down the valley.
"And then what?"
grunted Garrick in his phlegmy bass.
"Once we're done with all this business with the boy, what comes after?"
"We go on as planned," said Garrick.
Keel spat on the ground.
"We were scraping the barrel before we started. Otten and Dox were barely old enough to shave. Even with Vala and Tarvi, this was a skeleton crew. Now they're gone too."
He scraped at the spot of bubbled saliva with the toe of his boot.
"It's time to go home."
Cade was desperate for oblivion, but something hooked him and kept him listening. Distantly, he sensed this was important.
"We go on," said Garrick, "to the last man if we have to."
"They had three dreadnights watching him, Garrick. This isn't a game."
"It never was. There's still Yarin and Mara. We'll find others."
"Haven't there been enough? How many more need to die?"
"As many as it takes,"
said Garrick, and he walked away. Keel threw up a hand in angry exasperation and went the other way. Soothed by the fire's warmth, smothered by exhaustion, Cade gave up the struggle to stay awake, and his memory of the conversation was lost in a jumble of dreams.
"Come on, you. Have some of this."
Osman roused Cade with a cup of hot, salty soup. The day was bright and clear, and the sun was high. Cade sat up stiffly, took the cup, and sipped at it while he came to terms with consciousness again. Fenn was hunkered down on one knee, scattering the wet ashes of their fire with a stick. Her face was long and narrow, like the rest of her. She was so thickly freckled that they'd joined together in a cluster that covered her cheeks and forehead. Sensing his gaze, she glanced up at him without interest, then back at the fire again.
"Well," said Aaron, "we escaped."
Aaron was sitting wrapped in a blanket, wearing a weak smile and shivering. He was white, and there were dark hollows around his eyes. Underfed and tired, soaked and chilled, the cold had got into his bones. He didn't have Cade's constitution. The carpenter's boy almost never got ill.
"You ain't looking too good," Cade croaked.
"I'm not the one with my own knuckles imprinted on my face."
Cade felt his cheek sore from where he'd lain on his fist. He managed a smile at that.
"You both look ugly to Grub," Grub offered helpfully.
He stretched his arms and yawned, as if he'd just woken from a refreshing nap.
"Skarl's tougher than Ossian's. Grub walk 20 leagues a day, easy."
Cade was too tired to